Welcome to San Francisco City Insider, the San Francisco Chronicle podcast on the people and politics making headlines in the city by the bay. I'm Chronicle columnist Heather Knight, and this episode will appear on our flagship podcast, Fifth and Mission 2. I'm here with Dr. Allison Bond, an infectious disease expert at UCSF. She's talking about what it's like to treat patients with COVID-19, whether we've really flattened the curve already, and when life might return to some semblance of normal. Dr. Allison Bond, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, excited to be here.
So you're a doctor at UCSF working in the hospital and clinic with people who have infections. And there's a major infection people are interested in right now, of course, which is COVID-19. Wondered if you could just describe what you're seeing on a daily basis when it comes to the coronavirus.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there's just so much going on. It's hard to know kind of where to start. And it sort of depends what point of view you're looking from. I think, you know, broadly, there's a lot of activity in the hospital in terms of preparing for what we think might be sort of a wave of these patients with COVID coming into the hospital, as well as, you know, a lot of activity also in terms of caring for the folks who are in the hospital already with COVID. And there's, you know, just a lot of tension and I think uncertainty around the best way to be potentially treating these patients. We don't have very much data at all in terms of potential therapeutics at this point. And also a lot of sort of conflicting thought about testing and who should be tested. And of course, you know, also from the healthcare standpoint, also doctors, nurses, patient transporters, people who clean the hospital rooms, just everybody who's in the hospital is also sort of concerned about their own safety. And of course, I'm sure you've heard about the dearth of PPE.
Right.
That's sort of around. Although I think the hospitals here in the city are pretty well off in terms of protective equipment, at least for now.
Good. How many patients with the coronavirus do you have so far at UCSF?
I think it depends which hospital you're talking about. UCSF has, you know, a couple of different hospitals that we're affiliated with, including San Francisco General, UCSF, and the VA. And I think there are a handful probably at each hospital. I think UCSF, as of today, there were something like 9 patients. Don't quote me on that, although this is a podcast, so I will be quoted.
you just quoted yourself.
Yeah. That was sort of the latest that I heard was 9 patients. And then, you know, in terms of the latest number at the general, I'm not sure, but certainly I think we're still in the high single digits, low double digits, nowhere near kind of New York at this point. Mm-hmm. And I do know that the total in the city at large is, I think, 374 today, according to the SFDPH's website, with 6, unfortunately, deaths so far. So that's citywide.
Right. And can you describe, of course, not anything personal, but the patients you've treated so far, what are their demographics tended to be like? Are they older? Did they have other health problems? Is there a certain type of person who's seeming to come to the hospital?
Certainly the people that come to the hospital with these symptoms tend to be people that do have other medical issues. I think we're probably seeing a biased sample there because, you know, folks who are not hit as hard by the virus because maybe they are younger, maybe they do have fewer medical issues, just aren't coming to care. And so they may be infected, but we just don't know. And so I will say, you know, particularly people who get sicker from this infection tend to be people that have other medical issues like diabetes and high blood pressure and do tend to be older, but certainly it can affect anybody.
And what are the most common symptoms that you've seen?
Usually the, you know, fever, cough kind of story, those are the two predominant, symptoms that we're hearing about, but certainly other stuff like muscle aches, you know, you can rarely have upset stomach or diarrhea. You know, generally it's sort of hard to distinguish from the flu and other viruses. This does seem to be one that causes, you know, generally more cough than maybe what we've seen, but what we've seen with the flu and other viruses. But, you know, again, this is so early in terms of this emerging infection that we don't really have great data to say this is, you know, the predominant symptom that we generally see. We're starting to just only see the beginning of trends in terms of symptoms.
And I'm glad to hear that you said that you have enough protective gear so far, but is it scary as a medical provider to treat patients with such a contagious disease? And how do you kind of struggle with that?
Yeah, I think, you know, to be honest, as an infectious disease doctor, a lot of times I have the benefit of actually the colleagues that are even more at the front lines than I am in terms of having a heads up and kind of knowing what myself and what my colleagues might be walking into in the room. And the people that I'm really more sort of fearful for, the people that have more contact with people who might be infected and perhaps don't even know it until after they have left the hospital room and talked to the patient, are people in the emergency department, you know, hospital medicine folks. And I think, you know, potentially even more than physicians, nurses are in and out of those rooms much more often. So yeah, it's nerve-wracking, but I almost feel like I have it easy compared to a lot of the other people that are working really hard on this.
Mm-hmm. And we're all hearing horror stories from hospitals in Italy and New York City and elsewhere of patients on beds in the hallways or doctors collapsing in exhaustion or even getting sick themselves. And it doesn't seem like that has happened here in San Francisco in any major way. Do you think that that's what it's going to be like, or are we flattening the curve, or where do you see us heading in the next week or two?
I think there are some signs that we may be flattening the curve, but I'm hesitant to say that because A, I don't want to jinx it, but B, you know, I think that that should not dissuade people from continuing to physically distance themselves from others, and it shouldn't dissuade people from staying home because, again, you know, these are reassuring signs, but certainly there's still room for things to go south. And so I'm optimistic about that for sure. But, you know, I think even though also, you know, maybe thank goodness, like my colleagues haven't gotten so far gravely ill from this, there still have been, you know, a fair number of healthcare workers in the city who have tested positive. And so, you know, you get enough of those and inevitably some of those are going to be serious illnesses. So there's still, I think, plenty to worry about there.
Right. Dr. Grant Colfax, the head of the city's Department of Public Health, just spoke a couple of hours ago and said it's too early to say that we flattened the curve, and he's still concerned that a surge is coming. Do you feel like we probably haven't dodged a bullet, or
when will we know? I agree with what he's saying, certainly. I mean, there are some signs that make it look like maybe this is more promising trajectory than maybe had been predicted. But I think it's way too early to say that this is a success or to let our guards down in any way. And so I would definitely agree with that statement that he said.
Mm-hmm. And the city is announcing an extension of the shelter in place until at least May 1st. Do you think that that's the right move?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. 100%.
And are we getting any better in San Francisco about being able to test? Because that may be one reason why numbers don't seem as high as other places.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, we just don't know what the denominator is in terms of how many people have had this. And so, you know, there have been certainly a lot of rollouts of in-house testing in terms of the hospitals that I've worked at. So primarily UCSF and San Francisco General are the ones that I'm the most familiar with. But initially, these were tests that had to be sent out to either the Department of Public Health or other institutions, and that would create a turnaround time on the matter of days. And then, you know, it was really pretty amazing, pretty remarkable, shows just a lot of effort and talent on the part of, you know, the people that designed these tests. But, you know, very rapidly developed testing that was in our own labs in these hospitals that can give a result within, you know, certainly less than 12 hours, essentially. And so things are certainly rapidly scaling up in terms of the how quickly we can get results and also the capacity to perform more tests. I think we're still a pretty long way from being able to test everybody that we would like to, and we're still being careful about who we're testing. But I think
how do you decide
to
give a test to or not?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's been the question for a lot of us. And, you know, I think it hinges on basically two general factors. One is how high the index of suspicion is that a person might have it in terms of their symptoms. You know, if somebody comes in with cough and fever and they've got, you know, testing or imaging that's really concerning for pneumonia, that's probably somebody where we think, this sounds like COVID and I think we'll test them. So that's one person who is high priority to get a test. The other sort of group of people that we think about is folks who, you know, would have a broad impact from a public health standpoint if they were found to have a positive COVID test. So even if somebody maybe doesn't seem to have the textbook symptoms, but say that person lives in a group setting like a nursing home, or they are homeless and they live in an encampment, or they stay in a homeless shelter, you know, even if the story doesn't really sound as convincingly COVID-like, we still might test those people because we wouldn't want to miss that and run the risk of them sort of causing an outbreak in the place where they stay.
I'll be right back with Dr. Allison Bond. I'm back with Dr. Allison Bond. I'm glad you brought up the homeless population because I think a lot of San Franciscans are worried about that with trying to social distance at shelters and therefore thin the number of people inside shelters. The city has stopped taking shelter reservations, so people on the streets are going to be on the streets for the time being. Does that seem like an environment that's just rife for potential spread of this virus?
Yeah, I think, you know, rightfully so, people who are in charge of these places where people who are homeless can stay are concerned about protecting the people that are there from infection. And so I can certainly see sort of both sides of that argument. But it is certainly, you know, when you think about how close people sleep in these environments and things like that, it certainly would be very easy for an infection to spread rapidly. So it's something that, you know, I think it's good that people are being cautious about. I think this pandemic in general is sort of showing the cracks in our healthcare system, and right, in particular, really putting on display the shortage of housing that we have. It's sort of creating even more of an issue now that there are even fewer shelter beds potentially.
Right. And in such a mobile society, even if San Francisco does everything right, how do we prevent the virus from coming in from elsewhere at some later point?
Yeah, I don't think we can. I think this is an infection that there's certainly concern that, you know, this order to stay home until May 1st may sort of quell this first wave of infections. But there's concern that this may come back, say, in the fall or winter, kind of like we see, you know, the flu surge around that time of year. And I think, you know, things that might help mitigate that include a vaccine, which, again, you know, is far away at this point, but is something that we can certainly hope for in the future. And then, you know, we just don't know how many people have been exposed at this point. But if a lot of people have been exposed and they're immune, then you're going to see herd immunity. And that might also help prevent this from being something that comes back with a vengeance and makes a lot of people really sick.
So if you had a crystal ball, what would your prediction be about when life in San Francisco will return to normal?
I think that, you know, from what I've heard in terms of predictions, for when things may peak, it's been sort of the first half of April. And so I think, looking into May, things may start to, feel a bit more normal, especially if that, stay at home order is lifted at that point. You know, I think there will probably be, I was thinking about this earlier, I think it will be a very interesting dynamic as everyone sort of comes out of their homes and life sort of resumes as normal in terms of people sort of looking over their shoulder and being really cautious and wondering like, all right, now that we're all together again, is this going to just come right back? And so, you know, even if life returns to normal, I don't know sort of how long that will last.
Mm-hmm. Would you imagine that it will return to normal overnight, or will there be restrictions? Like maybe there aren't Warriors games, or there aren't, you know, major gathering events or something like that. Would you recommend like a slow reentry?
I think that objectively that makes sense just in terms of the number of exposures that people are having with other people. Certainly there are a lot of interests at play, and this is kind of a data free zone. And so I think only time will tell in terms of how it actually plays out. But from a public health perspective, I think it makes sense that fewer exposures would be sort of like a testing ground to see if the infection, you know, stays away. And then if everything's okay, then potentially open things up further. But I think that is also further complicated by the fact that, you know, the incubation period for this virus is up to 2 weeks. And so the effects may be very delayed and sort of hard to parse out as well.
I should correct myself, because Giants would be playing this summer, not the Warriors. Just to get that on the record. Yeah. there's been a lot of conservative reaction to paint the coronavirus as a hoax, or saying that people like the mayor or governor here in California are overreacting. And there are videos online showing hospitals that look pretty run of the mill from the outside, like, you know, just normal looking parking lots, as if to signal that nothing much is going on inside. I was wondering if you've seen those and what you would say to the people who are spreading this idea that this is all a big made up hoax.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's unfortunate that, you know, things can seem so normal or even quieter than normal from the outside, especially as everybody, you know, the streets are quiet in major cities and things look like there's not much happening there. And you really, you know, have to set foot into a hospital to sort of see what's happening. You can't really tell from the outside, but I think that, you know, it's part of our job in the medical community and the public health community really is to be communicating with the greater population. And so, you know, people who are saying that it's a hoax, I don't necessarily blame them. I think we need to be doing a better job maybe of having open lines of communication and just really being clear with people and not assuming that people are seeing what we as the medical community are seeing every day. So
San Franciscans are eager to express their thanks to people like you and other heroic doctors and nurses. And they're starting something tonight at 7 where they're encouraging people to go outside and cheer for doctors and nurses. And I was wondering what you think of that and what in your mind is the best way that city residents could show their appreciation.
That's really nice. I hadn't heard that about San Francisco. I've seen similar things in Chicago and New York, but I mean, that's really wonderful. And certainly, you know, we appreciate the support of the public. But I think sort of two things, you know, the best way that I think people can support healthcare workers is by kind of staying home, preventing the spread of disease. And, you know, if they're able to help donate PPE or, you know, other things that might help protect healthcare workers, I think that's much appreciated. But the other thing that I just want to bring up is that, you know, so many of these things are sort of lauding doctors and nurses, and that's really wonderful. But I think that there are just so many other people that are working really hard right now, you know, within the hospital that are just not being thanked at all. And the people that I think really actually deserve a lot of the thanks are, you know, the environmental services workers who are cleaning these rooms after the COVID patients are in there, you know, they're putting their lives at stake or at risk every single day. And really, you know, not, there's no, there's far less sort of, you know, congratulatory stuff right. going on there. And same with, you know, just everybody who's working in the hospital. And so I guess I would just broaden that 7 PM cheer to include everybody who's working in the hospital. Cause I feel like the, some of the credit is sort of like just concentrated on a couple groups of people. Whereas there are a lot of people that are, not being thanked who really should be.
Right. here in San Francisco that the thanking at 7 p.m. was really started by the teachers union. So I thought that was cool that it's one group of heroes supporting another group of heroes.
Oh, nice. So. That's very cool.
Yeah. Well, these are all my serious questions. And now it's time for our lightning round, which I'm sticking with because I think people can use a smile these days.
Absolutely.
Where is your favorite place in San Francisco to get a burrito?
Oh, any place in the Mission, I think. I have to admit, I'm sort of a newcomer to San Francisco. I've only lived here for a little over a year and a half, so I'm no expert. So I'm always open to suggestions if you have any.
All right. Well, I can gather all the previous answers in there.
Okay.
What? This might be a hard one since you're pretty new to the city, but do you have a favorite movie filmed in San Francisco?
The Rock?
Yeah, that's a good one.
I don't know. That's the only movie that I can think of that was filmed in SF.
Yeah, I'm a fan
sure
of
there
Sean
are very
Connery.
Many, but I just haven't seen them. So I'm going to go with The Rock.
Yeah. Okay. Where is your favorite place in the city to get a stiff drink? Back when bars were open.
Oh, yeah. I think I really like Marlowe for kind of a classy drink in in the China Basin area.
Cool. What was your first concert?
I don't even remember. Can we go to the next one?
Yes,
we
can. What was the last book you read?
Oh, last book I read was actually Elderhood by Louise Aronson, which I highly recommend.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
What is your favorite depiction of a doctor in TV or in the movies?
Oh, definitely Scrubs. That's the most accurate one.
Really? What is something pop culture tends to get wrong about being a doctor?
Well, whenever I watch any medical related show, I always sort of think to myself how well rested and glamorous everybody looks. They should really show us how we are with like the messy hair and rumpled clothes.
Yeah.
So I think that's one thing that could change.
Is it true that everybody's always falling in love with each other?
Some people, but not everyone.
Yeah. And lastly, what is something you always make sure to squeeze into your busy day?
I think time with my family.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining me and for treating our patients.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Take care. Thank you to Dr. Allison Bond for joining me today, to King Kaufman for producing this episode, and to you for listening. If you want to support San Francisco City Insider and the newsroom that creates it, become a member of the San Francisco Chronicle. Find out more at sfchronicle.com/pod. I'm Heather Knight. Thanks for listening.